Hello, and welcome to the Agile Embedded Podcast. I'm Jeff Gable.
And I'm Luca Ingenni.
And today we are joined again by a longtime friend of the podcast, Joe Schneider. Joe Schneider runs Dojo 5, an embedded software development consultancy, and was our very first podcast guest on this podcast. Gosh, that was over a year ago.
Yeah.
I think April of 2021. And today, Joe is here to talk to us about internal developer platforms and how that applies to the embedded world. And this is something he proposed this topic, and I'm really excited about it. So, Joe, welcome to the show.
Hey, thank you. Welcome, guys.
So, for those in the audience who may not remember, give us a brief rundown of who you are and what you do.
Yeah, you bet. I am, I guess, an electrical engineer, computer engineer, first and foremost, and actually, strike that, first and foremost, I'm a husband and a father.
There we go.
And I, you know, my family is a big part of what I do, but so is engineering. And so through a number of crazy things, I guess go listen back to the first episode where I talk a little bit about my past, but I've found myself now leading an organization really focused on embedded firmware and modernizing embedded firmware, modernizing the industry, trying to push the industry forward to use things like Agile and things like all these different tools and techniques and processes that help us deliver faster, on time, higher quality, all the things.
All the things we love to talk about all the time.
Yep, exactly. I mean, ultimately, too, our secret mission is really not only to have successful projects, but to help bring more joy into developers' lives, because ultimately it's not any fun to work on a failing project. And I think there are successful projects that have been built on the backs of very, very painful situations for developers. And so we're hoping to solve that too.
Wonderful.
Yeah,
just world peace.
I feel that can't really be stressed enough, right? Shareholder value is nice and all, but I don't care about it. Like, yep. I want to have an enjoyable experience building products that I can be proud of, do work that I can be proud of, and this is really what counts, isn't it?
I think so. Yep. Joy, bringing joy to the world, helping others be the best versions of themselves. That's my personal why. So yeah, so that segues nice into the internal developer platforms topic, I think. Because who loves to maintain all of the infra and crap for their, who loves to not do firmware engineering when you're hired to be a firmware engineer?
Honestly, I love all of that infrastructure stuff. Maybe I'm just weird that way.
I do not. I'll raise my hand.
We have a great panel here then. Yes.
Exactly.
I don't as well, although I love learning about it. I love the challenge of learning a little bit about it. And then looking back on it, I'm like, I never should have messed with that. That was a giant, a rabbit hole. And now and it's always the fact too that, it looks so easy on the surface, right? You're like, oh yeah, I could probably learn that in 10 minutes. I'll find a blog post, copy some stuff over. And then it's the stuff you don't know, you didn't know, that 10 minutes in, you're like, oh. And then 2 hours in, you're like, whoa. 2 weeks in, you're mm-hmm. like, holy cow. Like, this is now you understand why there's like, people with the job title, like DevOps engineer or Kubernetes, engineer, whatever, right? I mean, like, these are becoming, some of these tools are becoming so in depth and requiring professional help that, like, they become a skill set in themselves. And I think one of the things I was kind of mentioning is like, or I was thinking about before we got on the call here is, at what point do we have this singularity? Because embedded engineers have this tendency, I think, and I don't know that it's industry specific, even maybe it's just software engineers in general, but we like to build everything and understand how everything works in the entire system all the way through. And at some point, that's like just like on the surface that breaks, right? You just can't at some point with a system of sufficient complexity, you're not going to be able to understand everything. We've accepted as a community, like I don't try to understand how the transistor level, like silicon works on my embedded systems before I start building, the rest of the system, right? And so there's some level of acceptance. I haven't you know, when I've done cellular projects, I haven't decided, well, I need to understand how to build a cellular modem from scratch. Although it certainly would be tempting, you know, because
we're all tempted at those things. Absolutely.
Wow, that seems like so fun. And there'd be so many interesting things. But ultimately, you know, it's not the right choice. I think we all, and those ones are the obvious ones. Like, okay, cellular, I know that it's a giant mess, you know, and let's just let somebody, I'm glad somebody else has figured that out. But I think there's some not so obvious ones too, or ones, aspects of this that are of increasing complexity, you know, even in the last decade, that maybe they were pretty easy before, but now they're starting to be hard, and hard enough where maybe it's like, gosh, this is starting to be a lot to hold in my head.
Right. And so in the, you know, in the old days of not that long ago, and probably for a lot of companies still standard operating procedure,
right now.
So the standard way is a set of instructions, like hopefully written down. I'm going to just give them that it's written down of these are the tools you need to install on your local machine. And maybe you have people, some running Linux, some running Windows, some running Mac. God help you if that's the case, which is the case for a lot of teams. But you need to install, this version of this compiler and this particular linter, and then this other tool. We don't really care about the version of it; just get the latest. yeah. And then everyone has a development environment that kind of matches, and that's just kind of the state of things. And teams just muddle through with that. And when a new person comes on, if they have it written down, hopefully that person can follow that set of instructions over the course of a morning. If it's not written down, then someone's essentially sitting at their machine trying to figure it out for 2 days. At least write it down, folks. That's step one. But step two is to start to build standard development environments. We've talked about this in the past, but I think you, Joe, in this topic, you're recognizing that that in itself is a skill set that takes time to learn. And then it's still growing in complexity. You now have CI pipelines, so you're learning whatever tools are out there that help you with that. Maybe you have hosted services that host firmware images or whatever. If you're doing IoT devices, now you have over-the-air updates and that whole backend infrastructure. So talk maybe a little bit more about the different complexities of an embedded internal developer platform and how it applies to an embedded company.
Yeah, I mean, I think you bring up a really good point around the developer environment, the issues that you can run into when you are have different sets of tools and everybody's kind of managing their own set of tools, I think is state of the art maybe for embedded developers, but there is a better way. In a lot of web development or mobile development, you have it seems like they've embraced this kind of like community of like open source suppliers and libraries and stuff. You got tools like NPM or like the Ruby pack RPM. And I mean, all of these different package managers that kind of help us. And it seems like there's been some set of that happening. I think it's interesting what's happening in Rust right now. We'll see what's going to happen if Rust gets its heyday here with kernel, because they're finally going to the kernel now. Just, I think, got announced either this week or last week. Mm-hmm. They do have a pretty good set of their cargo stuff, you know, to be able to pull in Rust libraries and stuff. But this idea that there's XPack, and, you know, with CMake, you can do some things that'll pull in remotes. Like Google Test has a really nice CMake extension that'll just, you know, pull it down and set up your environment if you want it. But there still is not a great like go-to for embedded. Where do I get all these libraries? How do I get my environment set up? You know, and how do I maintain that environment? I know there's been a lot written on Conda too, which is a tool that maintains environments, you know, a work environment. But that is, I think it's not written for embedded, but you can hack it to work for embedded, right? It's not a bad tool. I think there's some stuff that's been written on that too. So there are people are finding some solutions to these things, but where we've really gone at D5 and with the EmbedOps stuff is around Dockerized development environments.
Okay, but I would like to stop the conversation at this point because it feels like we jumped in straight at the deep end, and we're, you know, in all of the weeds of Conda and Docker and all these things.
Okay, we're engineers.
Please, can we first talk about what's an IDP and why should I care?
Good point. So what is an IDP? Let's go back and talk about that. I will first disclaim that I do not claim to be an IDP expert. This term was new to me a couple of months ago, and I kind of started digging into it and understanding what does this mean. And I think there's a general, really quickly on the history of this, I believe, in my understanding, it comes from the web world, and it really comes from this idea where, like, developers have what we were just talking about. They have these kind of complex environments where there's a lot of tools that need to be pulled in. They do have some package management, but ultimately in what I'd call a modern web workflow, they will work on a ticket. They have something to demonstrate on a website or on a backend or something, and they need to set up, they don't want to push that to prod, obviously, but they do it in some kind of feature branch or development branch environment. And getting that, there's a certain amount of infrastructure involved in demonstrating that, whether it's a database, a backend server, maybe multiple backend servers. There's all this load balancing and crap that happens that I'm not an expert on. And ultimately, to demonstrate something on a website. And I think, what started happening is that these developers needed all this infra, and we have this wonderful DevOps kind of movement that's happening at the same time, where these teams start to specialize in infra and being good at infra. And then this damn silo starts building again, the thing that Agile is always trying to so hard to get rid of. And the DevOps guys start to be, the other side of the wall, where, well, I'm a developer, I need to build this system, and I threw in a ticket to the DevOps guys, 2 weeks ago, and they still haven't set up my infra, so sorry, I can't do anything, right? And so that's where this idea of the internal developer platform came from, is the idea that, like, can we change? It's not necessarily the technologies that are being used even, but is it just the angle of attack or the attitude of the DevOps team or an internal infrastructure team to provide a platform that enables the developers to do what they need to do? It's still very specialized technology, and internal may be specialized to your company, but it is, instead of being a walled garden or a tower of power that they own and manage, it's instead an enabling tool that helps the developer's self-service. So that is IDP, and as my understanding.
So let me just kind of repeat parts of that back to you, make sure I understand. So the things that a developer has to do on a daily, maybe hourly basis should not be hung up waiting on submitting a ticket, waiting for someone else to configure that for them. They should be able to spin up, an instance, and that instance could be very complicated of lots of different technologies. And so it's this internal developer platform is there's maybe a team that's focused on that their job is to make it so that when a developer wants to spin something up, they can do so them by themselves quickly.
Mm-hmm. I'm still not happy with the conversation. I still don't have a firm grasp on what an IDP is. Is that an instance of the production environment that I can use for development and testing purposes? Or is that an instance of my development environment, an IDE, a linter, what have you? Mm-hmm. Or is it both? Or what are we talking about? And, like, whose responsibility should it be to create that and drive it forward?
Yeah. Let's say you're a developer. What do you need on a day-to-day basis? I think it was a good description there, Jeff. Like, what do you need on a day-to-day basis to get your job done that isn't coding?
Mind is blown with all the possibilities. So you're not expecting us to list answers right now, but essentially all of those tools.
And and Luca might be thinking even beyond tools and just like culture and other things too, I can imagine. But is that true or not?
Not yet. So,
okay.
As far as I'm concerned, all of the infrastructure, all of the tooling is kind of the substrate, the soil, if you like, that you use to grow your tomatoes. And you care about the tomatoes, but you need the soil, don't you? And so at the moment, we are talking about IDPs, about internal development platforms. That to me sounds very technical. That sounds very tool-driven. So that's fine. I'm not even going off into the agile wonderland of culture and whatnot.
Yes, but sure,
still, like, I can see two very different aspects here. You know, the actual development environment with an IDE, complete with plugins, let's say, with a debugger that you can maybe hook up to your target system even, and getting all of that configured, because we all know that it's a horrendous hassle and it always breaks. Mm-hmm. So I could imagine that's an IDP. But also what I heard you say was something that sounds much more like the actual production platform to me, where you were talking about like Docker containers that you could spin up to try out your new increment of whatever you created. That is a completely separate issue as far as I'm concerned. One is absolutely internal, and the other one is sort of almost external. You just make the decision to not open this one up to the outside world. But, you know, in principle, you could just grab this Docker container if you're in a web environment and stick it on your public servers, you know, and it would just run.
Okay. I don't know how to take the garden metaphor any further off the cuff here, but a metaphor that I bring up a lot that maybe will help kind of, solidify what we're talking about here is the factory metaphor. When you're building something, you're building a widget. You're building a doodad, and there is a lot of technology that goes into the factory, and the actual steps, stages in the factory, really that as this thing goes down the line. And then there's also there's also technology, obviously, that goes into the thing itself. So I think what you're identifying there is there's technology around the development process, right? And how we build these things, but there's also technology in the thing itself. And I think those are two different places where, at least my definition of developer platform that I'm bastardizing for embedded can, make sense. There's things like, and maybe to go back to the garden metaphor, do I know that I need a watering can, and what kind of watering can do I get? And how do I know what that is? Is there technology that goes into that? Or is there fertilizer that I bring to the table to build these things? And then ultimately, I've gone down a hole here with the garden thing, but if my product is the tomato, is there technology that goes into the tomato? I don't know.
So maybe to try to answer your question, Luca, like you were asking, there's the development environment, and then there's the essentially the QA environment, the testing and demonstration environment.
The runtime
environment. I am guessing, again, maybe I'm putting word in Joe's mouth so he can say, but I would say internal developer platform can help you with both of those things. And it starts to help when those things become so complex or more complex than a firmware engineer should really have to learn how to use. So I could see, having some at a large team, someone dedicated to building and maintaining a set of Docker images or virtual machines or whatever that contain the tools you need to develop and also tools that you need to demonstrate and test out your code. Mm-hmm. And then if you're an IoT, like kind of that whole pathway of flashing and getting data off and that kind of thing. At that point, test instances of that to test that data flow. I would imagine IDP covers all of that. Joe, your thoughts?
I think so. Yeah. And I think, because it is the developer tools and the environment that they need to create these things. But I think it is also, as you mentioned, the things that you might want to put into your products, that are common across a common need, not core to a particular business domain or need. And it's the things that you come up with, like OTA. I want a CLI tool in my device. And I pretty much, for most devices, I want that in every place. Should I be building those from scratch every time, right? Or should I be going and grabbing one? And could we collect, a platform might look like, a set of development environment plus all of these libraries and common, needs in a system that all together bring me to a very, modern kind of place very quickly so that I can focus on the kind of unique or distinguishing aspects of my product rather than all of the infra, all of the stuff that's not coding the application level features, for the product.
So I imagine...
Is Luca looking happy yet or not?
I don't know. I
can't. He's not
what
happy.
What is with you today, man?
I told you, this is a subject that I really care about. And yeah. I feel that it's still all very muddled. You know, I have been the IDP person, even though I didn't know the term. I have been the IDP person on multiple teams. I have very strong opinions and a lot of experience on these topics. And so I'm listening to this and I'm thinking, no, it's much more complicated than this.
How do you define it? Why don't you take a stab at it?
What yeah, genius. Say? Let's see what you have to say.
All right. So it's an internal developer platform, right? It does not have anything to do with the runtime environment, except that I expect it will have mechanisms, scripts, Docker files, whatever, that create runtime environments at will. But I think this is really the internal environment that you use to craft your product. This is the collection of your debuggers, your linters, your IDEs, your Docker containers that encapsulate all of this, flashing scripts, your build scripts, your CI system, the versioning that surrounds all of this, not just the product versioning, but also the infra versioning, the artifact management, and so on, and so on, and so on. This, to me, is what is, is an IDP, an internal developer platform. And the fact that, at the end of it, maybe a couple of Docker containers fall out that turn out to be the production environment is kind of an incidental. That's a separate concern as far as I'm concerned.
Okay. Yeah, I guess when I said the testing part, and I don't know who said the word runtime, but I meant not, for production. I meant if there is a runtime required to test it.
I don't make the distinction. Like, okay. Runtime is runtime.
Okay. But I guess if you need to spin that up in order to test something, I would think that falls under this bucket. I feel like we're really going in the weeds here, but I feel like you've insisted on getting this right. So I want to time box this argument for the next minute, and then we're going to leave it alone and maybe agree to disagree. But if a developer needs to spin up something in order to test, it's part of their daily workflow, and that has any non-trivial complexity other than like plugging it into their machine and like watching the blinky lights go blink, then I think it could fall under this umbrella.
Yes. The thing that stands it up is the IDP, and the thing that is being stood up is part of the product. It is not part of the IDP anymore.
Hmm. Okay. All right. I think we're in violent agreement. Like I think we're saying the same thing. We're just very passionately saying it slightly,
but the entire debate was so muddled. I really felt a need to focus this.
This is the podcast version of the XKCD comic where you have, it's muddled. So let's introduce a new standard to rule them all. And now we have 15 competing standards. Right. All right. Okay. So let's get back to this. So Joe, you see this need for dedicated personnel with special skill sets, maybe to start tackling this. And how does an organization change when you start to treat this as a first-class need?
Yeah. And I think, one thing I'll probably just preface this with is that I think there might be some situations where you don't need this, but in any sufficiently complex system, and really what we're seeing in the industry and what our organization is really focused on is helping teams manage those modern embedded situations where firmware complexity is rising. And I feel like that's most of them at this point. There may be some situations where they're not, but in general, I feel like, and really what our hypothesis is that firmware complexity is exploding and exponentially, not just doubling, not just linearly. it's exponentially. And that is where companies are struggling because it is becoming a lot less of a throw an EE at the problem and more of a, like, we need a team of what look like even sometimes more like computer scientists than embedded, and that's where the lovely Venn diagram that all of us love is that overlap between the electrical engineering and the computer science. But it is requiring more computer science solutions, I feel like, to deal with that complexity. I think, you know, when you apply something like this internal developer platform to a company, it's really a reaction to a symptom, which is the team struggling with all of this complexity in the firmware, and then all of this other stuff that isn't actually even firmware, that is all of their development environment. How'd you put it, Luca? It's the stuff that you use to stand up the product, not the thing that stood up. Am I getting the definition right now?
Yeah, exactly. And I completely agree that it's getting more and more complex, and the demands on the creation process are also rising. You can't just spend a couple of weeks figuring out how to build your code. That's ridiculous.
So, right. But that's what happens right now.
Of course it is.
All over the place. There is like, gosh, we should really be doing unit tests. Okay. Now for the next 2 weeks, you spend, doing some evaluation of a bunch of the frameworks that are out there. You're hacking it into your build system. You're learning CMake details and then maintaining that over time. And right next to you is another person doing the same thing for some other, aspect of the build system. And those folks focusing on the development of the system, it's all of the infra pieces, right? And so they're really becoming like part-time fractional, like DevOps people in my definition for that team. And it erodes away at your ability to just focus on what you're trying to do. Yes.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. And that's actually an interesting point that you already made earlier. Like, should this be a separate IDP team, infra team, call them what you will, that are relatively far away and it's difficult to get in communication with them, perhaps? I mean, I'm sure they're nice guys, but they're just so far away mentally and perhaps even physically. Or should this be like a DevOps person, an IDP person on your team who takes care of your infrastructure needs? Or is that inefficient? And how do you deal with it? And especially, how do you deal with it as a small shop, as maybe a single person, like Jeff? Like, is Jeff his own IDP person, or is that?
Yes, I am. Baseball? It's terrible. I hate it.
What's that experience like for you, Jeff?
It's awful.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You should say you're IDP guy.
I've looked in the mirror and the enemy is me. I don't want to learn Docker. I don't want to learn CMake. I still use make files. It's simple. And as a consultant, remember, I'm passing off my projects to my clients. So I err towards the side of simplicity in the tooling that I choose. So I very much stick with tried and true. Most of my projects are still in C and not in C++, certainly not Rust. Oh my God, I would never inflict that on my clients as much as I want to try it personally. Yeah. Anyway, I want to treat the one-man shop as a bit of a special case. I'd like to come back to it. I think most of our listeners are not one-person shops and are members of teams. So let's kind of focus on that for a bit. There is still two different levels of scale. Or several, it's a continuum, obviously, but there's a typical company that probably has, single digit firmware development team. And then there's larger organizations that have lots of different product lines that have, teams, hopefully, maybe this matrix management, or maybe dedicated teams to each of those product lines. How do you see this fitting into that?
Yeah, I mean, We have one great data point. One of my good friends back from my John Deere days has joined us at Dojo 5 and is helping us. And he led what ultimately was an internal developer platform team at John Deere. Nice. And so at that scale, when you have 600 firmware engineers and QA folks, it's the cross-functional team, but that hundreds and hundreds. And you're managing all of this infra. It was CI infrastructure. It was like hardware in the loop testing lab infrastructure. It was also the developer platform and the tools and the containers and the VMs that they were using to manage the build environments, all kinds of stuff. It was a lot of work. I mean, for them, the answer at that point was, what ultimately was a multi-million dollar investment yearly you know, on this, on developer efficiency. And I think it worked. I think, you know, it was the best solution they had at the time. I think there's things that they'd change. You know, as always, there is when you look back. But ultimately, I think the structure of the team, you know, how they did that with a team that was serving, you know, all the rest of the teams, you know, seemed to work pretty well for them. I think, you know, the firmware teams of 5 to 10 to 15 people, they're not going to have that anywhere near that level of resources, right? And that's where I start to think, you know, as an industry, I go back to that kind of conversation about, are we good at bringing in other tools? Like, I don't need to invent the firmware for a cellular modem, right? When I need cellular connectivity on my device, I am more than happy to go buy a modem that somebody has already figured that out for. I don't want to build that. Although it is tempting sometimes. And so, because it's a nice hairy problem, and you know that there's going to be the sense of accomplishment you would get after doing that, especially as an individual, you know, a developer, which is just, that's crazy talk. It would never get done. Like, we would be on to 6G before, you know, I'd get 5G done or something, right? But I think there is a natural kind of sense for folks to want to kind of tackle on a lot of these things. And I think that's where you kind of get this, like, well, gosh, this, like Docker, for instance, like, yeah, I found a blog post. Looks pretty easy. Mm-hmm. You throw in a couple lines. Ah, you got your first container. Cool. And then you start to, I see something that's tricky. And it's all these things that you don't know when you're getting into it, that all of a sudden you're like, wait a minute, this is a deep rabbit hole. And that's where I feel like a lot of us in our industry, especially that 5 to 10 to 15 developer, it's really tempting to just like, I know we don't have, you know, money, or I don't know, we don't know, have a way to invest in this, you know, as a team, we're underwater, we're keeping our product lines up and going. How do we do this? That's where I think, you know, there's gotta be some aspect, of course, you know, understanding of the, from management of how to approach this and get some time carved out and some investment, but they're not going to have that huge team to support them. So it is, I think at that level, that's the most interesting level to me, because mm-hmm. at the big enterprise level, it's just throw money at the problem and like eventually it'll work itself out. At the tiny little shop, it's basically like, I can't do it at all, so I guess I'll just like not do it.
Well,
the middle guys have the opportunity though.
And it might be worth, so on a 10 to 15 person team, that's probably one person's full-time job. I would say like that to me, that's kind of the first answer is you as the manager or executive of this organization probably need to open a rec, not for a firmware person and then ask them to learn this stuff, but for a software engineer who has an interest in firmware. You know, it's a slightly different skill set that you're hiring for, or, you know, maybe someone with aptitude just focuses on that, but they need mm-hmm. to focus on it. That's the key. I think they can't be focused on the world of developing your embedded application and this world, because both of those are becoming so complex. There's just too many pieces to hold in one person's head. What do you think about that?
Just the acknowledgement of that, I think, is a big step. And I right. think you're also identifying the next problem, which is we don't have a great word to describe this person. What would the job rec be called? You know, is it a infrastructure firmware engineer? Is it a platform engineer? I mean, those words exist in the web world and they've kind of started to mean something there. But in the embedded world, no.
Yeah, you know, it's funny because in the web world, there is no really good word for that either. So maybe that's a DevOps person, or maybe that's like an infrastructure person or a platform person. But it's still kind of vague, because infrastructure and platform could also mean production and not internal tooling, which is what we are talking about, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, and so I agree. It's not actually very hard per se to do these things, but just like you said, Joe, you really need to enjoy it. You need to be given the space and the time to focus on this and sort of fight your way through the Docker documentation until you come up with a really good container, for instance. And I think this sort of thing starts to become important much earlier than the 10 to 15 person level. So for for one thing, it scales really well. So building a container for one person is not really a lot more effort than building it for 100 persons, right? So in that sense, you know, if you're starting at 15 person, then you have an infrastructure. You have somebody who, you know, who deals with infrastructure either full time or as part of their tasks. It's maybe already too late. And the other thing is you need to realize that this is very important implicit documentation. Like you are writing down, you are making concrete your development environment. And I think that is important even for a one-person shop to be able to iterate quickly and also to go back quickly to, you know, to a given project after 6 months or something. And you say, hang on, how did that even work? And how did I hook up this board to my flasher or something? That all needs to be crystal clear, and it needs to be crystal clear in the language of code, as far as I'm concerned.
Mm. I was wondering if you were making a pitch there for just really good readmes and documentation, or if it was for code. So I'm glad you clarified.
Yeah, so readmes are awesome, but like, if you're going to write something down, why not just make it executable in the first place?
Yeah.
So, how can someone get started? So, I feel like a lot of the episodes of this podcast have kind of tackled these different topics, and they always say, okay, how do you get started? Start simple, grow organically from there. Kind of the answer is always the same. But in this case, like you said, is it just basically recognizing that the industry is this difference in quantity is now a difference in kind of the quantity of tools we have to learn. We have now stepped over the edge of the set of tools that a single person can understand. Mm-hmm. And recognizing that. And so then that enables you to start hiring dedicated, you know, kind of get a manager or a leader's frame space to a headspace to hire people dedicated to this. How do you see this starting at a company?
It's a great question. One that I wish I had an instant answer to, but I don't. I think you're right that, for the listeners that are, you know, kind of at the individual contributor level or, you know, they're mm-hmm. not a manager, that it is helping, you know, recognizing that this is something that is critical to our company. You know, this infrastructure, these development environments, you know, in the past, they've been really simple. Well, you just install MPLAB or something, and then that's the whole environment. It's no longer that. If you have a modern pipeline built out with lots of tooling and quality checks and everything all automated, you have a new, I mean, that's all great and that's good and that's moving forward, but you create a new problem, which is how do we manage that and make sure everybody is, you know, able to get those environments up quickly and running. And I think, and then recognizing too that is our quality system. Like, this is how we get faster. This is how we get, you know, low defect count. I mean, and so like the idea that we duct tape it together with like 10% of Jim's time, and he's the only one who kind of knows how it works, so we just bug him and hopefully he's available if it's broken. Like, you're applying that to your quality system that is getting that is responsible for making sure you are releasable every single minute, every single day. And that is it. Like, you need to turn the mindset of the person who thinks duct tape is okay in that case. It's like recognizing the value of what you've got there, because it's super valuable. And then, investing in it appropriately, I guess, is really, that's my thought.
Now, I just love that we're getting a smile out of Luca now. He's been grumpy the entire episode, and now he's like smiling and nodding. He's like, yeah, now you're talking. Yeah, it's quality, baby.
Finally, we're getting somewhere. finally, we're focusing on the right thing. Thank you very much, Joe. Which is not that, oh, you know, it's a hassle and it's expensive and it sucks and it's no fun. But, you know, this is crucial. This is where value gets created or burned, you know, in tremendous amounts. Engineers banging their heads against the wall because something doesn't work, and you miss bugs and you miss deadlines, and it's just terrible. So this is just fundamental. This is just one of the tools of the trade, I think. Just like testing, for instance. Like, we don't debate whether this is a good idea or not. It's just a given. Like, this is how you do proper modern software development, embedded or not.
I mean, I agree with you. I bet there's still a decent amount of people in the industry. When I say unit test to them, that means hardware in the loop, manual testing at their desk. So you're not wrong, but I don't know that the industry is where you're at, but we're getting there.
Yeah, but the point is they cannot afford to stay where they are.
Yes.
And the other thing is they know that they are making life hard for them. It's not like those people are stupid and they don't realize that manual testing is not a great idea and totally. everything sketchy, everything duct tape is somehow, you know, a marvel of engineering. Of course it's not. Then they're very well aware. But I think they're just making they're skewing the cost-benefit analysis because they're thinking, oh, we would need this whole big, complex system. But of course you don't. This gets back to Jeff's question, where do you start? Well, yet again, I come with this thing, how do you eat an elephant bite by bite? Just pick a place and start there. Like, if you don't have automated tests, maybe that's a good opportunity. If you're not sure how to actually create a build environment, maybe you could just investigate that and write it down in terms of a script, ideally. And use tricks like null automation. It doesn't have to be a perfect script that runs absolutely through and through the first time around. You can just iterate your way towards this goal. And you have to.
So I have a thought here. So it's interesting. So we will give time at the end for Joe to pitch his service. Joe's company runs a service that does this for you. And this is not going to be a pitch for his service, but it is going to be recognizing the fact that I think the whole thesis of this particular episode is, as Lucas said, you can start to make these improvements in your tooling incrementally. But to get to where you need to be requires so many incremental steps and so many new technologies that it can be very difficult for people to learn all of those to the level necessary.
I'm not even convinced that's true because the hard stuff is your build pipeline, for instance, which you've already set up. It's just perhaps not documented at all, and everybody kind of hopes that it holds together. But you've got all of the elements in place, and now you're just sitting down and making a coherent system out of this jumbled duct tape mess.
Okay, but I guess whether some one person can, maybe you don't have anyone on your team who wants to, or even still, there are a lot of roadblocks that a persistent person can push their way through, but people who don't have perfect persistence will run up against those and in the meantime everything kind of grinds to a halt. So maybe a thesis is, or a one thing I'm putting out there is, we are approaching the level where it may make sense to outsource some of these things or to use mm-hmm. prepackaged frameworks. This Embedot system that Joe's company is developing is one of them. There are other The market is, I think, seeing this and starting to respond slowly. There are people who have taken over a lot of the IoT infrastructure. Memfault comes to mind. You know, they take care of a lot of the things that you would have to build up yourself, like as a firmware engineer, learning all these freaking web technologies that are, you know, and all the best practices and all the little nooks and crannies and gross parts. They figure that out so you can just use them and plug it in. The web world, that's what a web engineer does nowadays. I'm a web engineer. My understanding is, yes, you write some application code, but you are also just linking together all of these different services, this buffet of tools to choose from. The embedded world is moving in that direction. And there will come a point when it doesn't make sense. And that point is either here or right around the corner. And I think for teams of a certain scale, it is past, where you can't have people figuring this out bit by bit on their own. You need to kind of bite the bullet and start taking advantage of either off-the-shelf tooling or building a dedicated team to build that tooling. Is that a fair summary?
I think so, yeah. I completely agree that it's becoming its own separate skill set, because also there is more to it than just understanding Docker or Jenkins or what have you. But it's also really about understanding the intricacies of development workflows, of, you know, dealing with source code, understanding, you know, understanding workflows, that sort of thing, and then expressing them within the automation. And that is just becoming its own profession.
So if we circle back to what you said just a couple minutes ago, which was like, I don't agree that, you know, it won't just evolve into something great. I was gonna counter that with like, have you ever met a team that is struggling with their homegrown CI automation developer environment
one?
System? Yeah, right. I mean, like everyone, right? And beyond a certain size. Now I'll go talk to some solo folks like Jeff and they're like, oh yeah, you know, I mean, most of the time they don't have a lot of automation. So Jeff's different, you know, in that case, most of the time I say unit tests and, you know, they're not sure what I'm talking about, but they, you know, in a lot of cases they, you know, I don't think it makes sense for them to do this, but, or they need to get past some other hurdles before they do this. But, you know, at some point, I think every team kind of is hitting this wall where it's like our infra isn't really working for us. And we've got a roadshod team of, you know, a cobbled together of random folks that are kind of working on it and sort of making it work. And, you know, we used to have code coverage, but then it broke when we did a Jenkins upgrade and nobody knows has had the time to really re-enable it again. I mean, like that is the story over and over again. This is where we're getting stuck as an industry adopting all these great practices. And that's why I feel so passionate about this internal developer platform and how we can change the attitude of our development groups to say like, this should be a first class requirement as part of your process, development process. This is how you develop high quality code, and it's not getting any easier. You're going to need to automate more, and you're going to need people to manage, develop, you know, maintain that automation.
Yeah, that's true. And I like the example you gave of code coverage. Like if you don't realize the value of code coverage, then if your coverage measurement system breaks, you'll just be, how annoying. But like I would feel really uneasy about that, getting this feedback and having some kind of indication of whether my tests were good enough, were covering enough. So to my mind, this is the thing that's behind just the code coverage, actually understanding where you need it, how you use it. Of course, this doesn't just go for coverage, but for all of the other things. Like it's really important that teams understand the value that they are gaining from things like test automation, like mm-hmm. code coverage, like having repeatable builds, et cetera, et cetera. The amount of trouble that they can avoid.
Exactly. Yeah. So I'm really curious to kind of just pull this all together. Like, what would be part of that that platform in your mind that people should be looking for? I'm just curious to kind of do a quick survey of both of you. What would be part of that platform?
Sure, I'll take a swag at it. So, I mean, So the entire development environment, everything I need to build and debug code, maybe not write. People like their own editors, fine. but everything needed to the continuous integration pipeline, the build pipeline, and all of the different checks that occur, all of the tooling with all the versions, and the script that instantiates that. So that should not be a Jenkins setup. Like, I'm very on board with your webinar that you did a little bit ago about the dangers of Jenkins.
Sure, thanks.
You know, Jenkins, you've essentially built this system on this cloud service, but those scripts are not captured themselves as code. So I'm very much a fan of the infrastructure as code.
Yeah.
I do not do a lot of IoT work, so I am not familiar with that, but I would want, at that point, it opens up the back end of how do you, like, flashing, getting data off, So I would want essentially a test instance of, I've got a couple of devices on my desk. Can I exercise that entire bidirectional platform at my desk quickly, like without wait, like, you know, I need to do this right now. Like within 30 seconds, that code should be down there and I should be seeing data streaming off those devices. Everything necessary to make that work, I would want, I would include in this.
Because at that point, you could just focus on the code.
I could just focus on the code and I wouldn't be worrying about the all the tooling.
The infra, so to speak.
The infra, world. Exactly. Yeah. So, Luca, do you have anything to add to that? Anything I missed?
Yes and no. So I would actually like to remove a couple of things, which is that I think especially in embedded, we need to be honest and say, well, there are probably going to be things that just will stay manual forever. Like if you need to physically plug something in, that's just going to be a manual step in a README somewhere. And that's just how it is. So I don't want people to get this impression that we are asking for too much or being unreasonable or sort of fast talking away some of the aspects that are very specific to what we're doing. And in that same vein, I'm also very much in favor of getting started and maybe having half a system that actually does something instead of a perfect system that you don't dare to start on because it's just so much and so scary.
Yeah.
But other than that, yes.
Yeah, I mean, I just say too, I think there's, in my mind, there's a evolution. There's kind of different steps on an evolution, right? You start with a couple of these things and the company's not really depending on it for quality. You still got all your other quality systems or whatever in place. But you're starting to play with unit testing or something, right? That's how it starts. And then you start to get a couple other people on your team interested in it. You know, they understand the culture and the tools, the techniques to get unit tests built in. And then they start to write some. And now you're like, oh, now I want to make sure they're running all the time. So then you set up some kind of CI step, right? That makes sure they're running. And it just kind of snowballs. And there is, I think the point is that there's some inflection point where your team is really like the quality, the value is there in that pipeline or in those tools or in your infra altogether. And at that point, you begin to depend on it and it becomes a first-class citizen and you need to treat it as such and maintain it and develop it as such because it's your team is beginning to see the efficiencies of it. And if you lose that, you're going to lose the efficiencies. So,
yeah. And to make that point, I completely agree. And to make that point, it becomes part of your product. Like the development workflow is just part of delivering value to the customer, which is the point. I don't care about your C++. I don't want it. Like, I want a widget that makes my life better.
Exactly. But I love that point that you make, that it becomes a part of your product. Exactly. And I think the other point, too, is that more and more products are, you're not just developing once and delivering value once. You're delivering value over and over again. And so to do that, you know, in a reliable, safe, you know, predictable way, you need these automation tools. And I think that's the key point, is it becomes a first class, you know, requirement of your product. To deliver value over and over again, we need, you know, X.
It's a great point. Very good point. You can't iterate tightly if you don't have all of these difficult things made easy through automation.
Yeah.
I think that is a perfect place to start to draw this to a close. We're running over almost an hour here. So Joe, tell us a little bit about Dojo 5 and EmbedOps and what you're doing there.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, as I mentioned before, I think Dojo 5 is really just a group of firmware engineers working on modernizing firmware in many different aspects. We have a large group of service folks that help with custom firmware development. And we also have our EmbedOps product, which is really all of our learnings from working with those folks as we're kind of and packaged up in a way that is easy for folks to kind of come up with. We also kind of serve as that fractional DevOps team. So if you're a developer or small team that wants, you know, fractional support for your infra, you know, and your help wants a developer platform for your team, that's what we're providing with EmbedOps. And, you know, our website is a great place to go. We got a bunch of blog posts out there. We've got information about our team out there. information about EmbedOps. Hello@dojo5.com is an easy way to get a hold of us. LinkedIn's always fine too. Lots of stuff happens there. So any way you want to reach out, we're really interested to hear from people on thoughts on, you know, what we talked about today, as well as just general thoughts on where the embedded industry is going, especially around the infra and DevOps pieces.
Wonderful. And I'll do a personal pitch. So Dojo 5 does a bunch of webinars that I found very valuable. They did a recent one on command line interfaces that was really fantastic. So certainly recommended to check those out.
Thanks, Jeff.
All right. Luca, anything else?
No, I think this episode is already packed full to the brim of good stuff. So,
all right. Good. Well, this has been the Agile Embedded Podcast. I'm Jeff Gable.
And I'm Luca Angianni.
And we will see you all next time. Thank you.
Thank you. Bye-bye.